And our next case is number 182382, Apple Inc. versus Andrea Electronics Corporation.
May it please the court, Jeff Cushion for appellant. This appeal concerns two decisions of the PTAB regarding the same patent. In those two proceedings, three or four claims are the only issues left to address. All of the other claims that were contested were found unpatentable and haven't been, no review of those decisions.
Why did Apple break it into two separate petitions?
So there were two different sets of prior art that showed why these claims were unpatentable, and they were implicating different types of aspects of the processing systems, and we just presented them in two different approaches.
Is that a common approach in IPRs?
It was. I think the board has more recently suggested that they should try to force everything into one petition for efficiency, but at the time these petitions were filed, I don't think that was an unusual practice.
Thank you.
So I'd like to first start with the 626 proceeding. And in that case, the board found that Apple had raised a new theory of unpatentability in its reply, and then it refused to consider part of the record that was before it. That was so the first question, whether the patentability question was different from what had been presented in the petition, is a question you review de novo. The second issue is whether that decision to not consider the full record was an abuse of discretion. That was a link to its incorrect first decision. Apple didn't raise a new patentability theory in its reply. Its obviousness theory in the reply was the same one it presented in its petition, and that was that it would have been obvious to run the noise floor algorithm that was in the Martin reference on the Hirsch apparatus.
Why is setting W to 1 just an example and not the only condition under which the prior rendered the claims anticipated or obvious?
So the ground we advanced, two answers to that. First, it's very clear in the record we did not portray that as the obviousness ground. We actually said in the petition, this is an example, and I can give you the quote, at Appendix 131 to 132, you see the challenge to Claim 4. What we say right there is a skilled person would have found it obvious to modify Hirsch's adaptive threshold calculation to use Martin's noise floor algorithm. And then when it got to the example that was used to illustrate how that algorithm worked, that example was from patent from petitioner's expert, Dr. Hochwald. That was at Appendix 130. And Apple said, Dr. Hochwald illustrates Martin's algorithm with the following example. And from the record, it's clear that was an illustration. It was an example from their expert, from our expert, to show how the variables within that algorithm would change as it processes a portion of that sound signal. The ground, as I said, was run Martin's algorithm on Hirsch's apparatus.
What page would you direct us to for knowing what the ground is?
So I'd direct you to page Appendix 131 to 132. This is the detailed explanation in the petition why Claim 4 was obvious. And then as you march through the rest of the proceeding, the section dealing with the combination of Hirsch and Martin, that's Appendix 132 to 136. What you see is that Apple mapped the various requirements of those claims to the aspects of the algorithm that it had presented. The algorithm as a whole is presented in the petition. It's not cribbed or otherwise constrained. There's no reference in the analysis of the obviousness reasons in that section from 131 to 136.
I did read your petition, and the only place where I saw the discussion of W equal 1 is on page A130. Are there any other places that I missed?
No.
Okay.
So The reason that's important, the way we framed our challenge, is that under this court's precedent in Parker Vision versus Qualcomm, when you're evaluating the patentability of a claim to an apparatus, you look to see whether the prior art apparatus has the capability of performing what the claims require. Here, our obviousness challenge was if you run Martin's algorithm on the apparatus that Hirsch had developed, then that apparatus doing the Martin algorithm will meet every requirement of claims 6 to 9. That was the ground we had in our petition. That was the ground we had in our reply. And that's why it was improper for the board to find that we had raised a new patentability theory in our reply. And it was also an abuse of discretion for them to then not consider the full record. And that abuse of discretion, I think, compels a remand.
And you're not, as I understand it now, arguing that this particular illustration where W equals 1 is anticipatory.
No. Our it's an obviousness ground, and the obviousness ground is based on running the algorithm as a whole in the apparatus.
With multiple sub-windows.
Yes, in any configuration. It's a capability question. The algorithm, when it runs, as it's depicted in the Martin algorithm, doesn't set the W number. It's an algorithm that you can set as you wish.
I understood your reply, I think it was a reply, to be saying that have a twofold response. One was that you can set W to 1, and it will still render the claims, I guess, obvious. And then alternatively, that you didn't intend to limit W to 1 anyway, and look at the example where W equals 4.
I think part of the confusion is the way that it was engaged by the patent owner in response. They attacked the illustration from Dr. Hochwald as being an unrealistic illustration of how Martin might work. The reason Dr. Hochwald used that illustration was just to help the board see what the variables, how they change. There are three variables. There's a future minimum, a current minimum, and then there's a value of the sound. But the illustration was designed to show how the values of those variables change as it's processing a sample of sound. These samples usually involve thousands and thousands of data points, so he made an overly simplistic one that only had like 30 data points, just so you could see what the values are of those variables as they move through the data set. That challenge, or the attack of that as W equal 1 not being reasonable, was really aimed at his illustration. It wasn't about the challenge we presented as for obviousness. And that's why some of the confusion has arisen. What you see in our reply is our explanation.
Well, they argued also, did they not, about the word W equals 4?
Yes. And we actually, if you look at Dr. Hochwald's declaration, he goes through and he observes in Martin that W equals 4 example. But he's not using it to show obviousness of the system. He's using it to illustrate what those variables are doing as it's processing the sound sample. And as a consequence, when you see the challenge in the reply, what we did in the reply was respond to the arguments and criticisms that Andrea had lodged against our explanation, and including of the illustration. The reason that's not consequential is that what we were showing in that illustration is that the requirements of the claims are met when you process data. And one thing to note, you'll see in the picture that's in the petition that came from Dr. Hochwald, that's a graph. There are two kinds of sound. One kind of sound has the magnitude consistently increases over the sample. That's called monotonically increasing sound in Martin. The other kind of sound varies. It goes up and down. That's not monotonically increasing. If you look in our petition, you'll see there's a block which says if it's not monotonically increasing, you go left on the left side of that equation. And that is the illustration that's being shown in the figure. In Dr. Hochwald's illustration. And it shows clearly that in that setting, the variable for the future minimum and the current minimum gets set to the lowest value, no matter how many sub-windows are used. That's just math. It just says find the lowest number within that block of samples. And that's what the reply explained, why it was an inconsequential issue for the ultimate question for that kind of sound. So I think in this case, the board just erred in finding that we raised a new patentability theory. We use the same mappings in the claims of the prior art to the claims in the petition as we did in the reply. We used the same part of the prior reference in both places. There's no difference in our patentability ground, and that was the error that you reviewed de novo that we believe should be reversed.
How important is the issue of periodic?
That's
periodically
the,
to you.
For the 626 proceeding, it's not not implicated because the Martin system does that at a regular interval. The periodicity issue is one issue that we believe can justify a reversal on the 627 proceeding, and that's because it's a claim construction issue. And if you look at in that it does matter. It doesn't matter for the 626 because it wasn't disputed in the 627 proceeding.
627.
So in the 627 proceeding, the reason why it doesn't matter is that under our construction, there's no dispute that the method of health will meet the requirements of the claims. They have not disputed under the broader construction that the claims are unpatentable. So in the 627 proceeding, what I'd like to do is just talk through an illustration which shows what the meaning of periodically is as it's explained by the patent. And if you look in claim 9 of the patent, the term that claim is referring to a future minimum, it says that the future minimum value is set to a current magnitude value periodically. That's claim 9's use of periodically. The future minimum is the value in this system where it's the lowest magnitude of the sample of the sound that's being analyzed. The current magnitude is the value of each data point in that sample. This process is illustrated in Figure 7 of the patent, which is at Appendix 68. And what Figure 7 shows, two things. First, it shows that if the value of the future minimum is greater than the current magnitude of the sample being evaluated, that's what's designated Y paren N.
Which, I'm sorry, but this, what I'm looking at Figure 7, just to make sure I'm catching up with you.
You'll see in the bottom middle left side, you'll see a line of logic going down where it's referring to the future minimum.
Okay.
And you see in items 710 and 716, the processing. Those are events that are occurring not at a regular interval. Those are events that are being driven for each data sample being evaluated. So right there, it's showing that that value, future minimum, is being set not at a regular interval, but from time to time, whenever the data condition is met. Then at the bottom of that figure, it takes a dog leg over, I guess, to the left, and the future minimum gets set at the 5-second interval again. That's what's referred to as the initiating of the value. So right within this figure 7 are two ways of the value of the future minimum being set to a current magnitude as claim 9 is envisioning. One from time to time and the other one at a regular interval. And so that's why in our construction for periodically, we said that's the meaning, that's the ordinary meaning of periodically, and it matches exactly what the claims specify.
But what about the column 8, line 36, where it says the future and current minimum values are calculated continuously and initiated periodically, for example, every 5 seconds, as determined in step 724? That seems to contemplate that periodically means at regular intervals.
Well, I think in all fairness, it would contemplate it's doing it both. So the continuous calculation, the continuous setting that's being illustrated in figure 9 figure 7 is showing that the values are going to change whenever the data conditions are true. Is the value lower than the one that's been stored? That's a continuous operation as it's laid out in Figure 7. And then the initiation is the thing that occurs at the end of that block of time, for example, 5 seconds. But I think it's also fair to look at the patent as a whole, because when you're engaging this question of what periodically means, you have to evaluate how is periodically used in the patent specification as a whole and what construction accommodates all the different ways it can be understood. And that's where, when you look at the illustration in Figure 7 and all the other ways it's been, these values are shown being updated, it compels the finding that it's the broader meaning that it can occur from time to time or at a regular interval. Now, again, as I said, this issue, if you find that it is as we've described, it compels a reversal because there's no dispute about the patentability question under that broader construction. Just briefly, the last issue I want to flag is also related to the 627 proceeding. And here, this is an issue that we, if you don't fine for us on periodically, we do believe that this would also justify a remand on the 627 proceeding. What we said in our petition was that a skilled person would have found it obvious to adapt a part of the health system. This is a different reference. And that aspect is called the running estimator. And that what we said in the petition was it would have been obvious to adjust that running estimator to set the noise floor at regular intervals based on the guidance in Martin. We didn't say that you should change when you should use that type of estimator. We said when it's running as the running estimator, you just adjust how that running estimator works. Apple, and I'm sorry, we in this response, Andrea came back in the proceeding and argued that, essentially another straw man argument, it said that it's Apple's position that we should call for changing to the preconditions that would dictate whether you use the running estimator or the stationary estimator. And that was not Apple's position. But then when you look in the board decision on the 627 proceeding, it actually embraces that argument from Andrea.
Going back to periodically for a minute, did you make that figure 7 argument, walk through figure 7 like that in your brief? I just don't recall seeing it.
So in our brief, we did address the, I believe we addressed this figure 7 issue. And I would have to double check that. Maybe I could respond to that in our rebuttal.
Okay. We'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Bellinger.
Thank you. May it please the court, William Bellinger on behalf of Andrea. I want to start my argument in reverse order, starting with the periodic argument that you just heard. And I'd like to point out what I think is a key deficiency in what counsel just directed you to with respect to figure 7. So he's correct that in Claim 9, the patentees chose the word periodic to describe circumstances where the current magnitude value is, the future minimum value is set to the current magnitude value periodically. If you look just earlier to Claim 8, it says where the current minimum value is replaced with the current magnitude value, where so current minimum value is greater than said current magnitude value.
And that's, I guess, consistent with the discussion in column 8, lines 38 through 40, that where it's said to be different, calculating continuously versus initiating periodically.
Exactly. So one example the patentee gives is if one value is greater than another, you replace them. The other example they give is you replace them at a fixed period of time. Both experts agree in the context of this patent, periodically means a fixed interval of time. So there's no dispute that the construction that the board adopted was one that was supported by both Apple's expert and Andrea's expert. And so,
but it does say, for example.
The intrinsic record says, for example, 5 seconds. As the board found correctly, there was a dispute whether the example was 5 seconds or 6 seconds or 10 seconds, or whether the example was a fixed period of time or from time to time. There's no evidence in the record that the, for example, meant from time to time. The example counsel gave is an alternate method, which is not a periodic update.
The example doesn't preclude from time to time, does it?
I would say the example, as understood by a person with ordinary skill in the art, would preclude from time to time, because they gave one example of an update from time to time. They described that as doing the update greater than. And then they gave another example. The only example that they called the periodic update was every 5 seconds. The exemplary portion of that was the time. Obviously, doing it every 5 seconds wasn't limiting. It could be 6 seconds or 10 seconds.
What about figure 7?
Yes, Your Honor. So in figure 7, as I noted, there are two types of updates. If you look at box 712 or 710, those are doing a comparison. So Y sub N, that is the measured magnitude value, or the current magnitude value in the claims. And it's determining whether the future minimum is greater than that. So that's one type of update. You're doing a comparison to see whether one value is greater than another. If you, and that's either yes or no. You go down to 724, that's described by the patentee as being a periodic example.
He points to 710 and 714.
Yes, Your Honor. So if you follow the logic in 710, that's done consistent with claims 7 and 8 when one value is greater than another value. The only update that's done from time to time, at a fixed interval of time, is 724 did 5 seconds elapse. So there's one example that's a periodic update every 5 seconds. That's what the patentee described as periodic. There's another example where it's done based on a comparison of whether one value is greater than another. And I would direct you to the board's decision. This is Appendix 32 and 33. They started as is proper.
Sorry, what was that?
Appendix 32 and 33.
Thank you.
This is where the board evaluated the claim construction issue. They properly started with the intrinsic record, and then they looked to the extrinsic record, including the dictionary definition that Apple places primary reliance on, as well as the testimony of both experts as to, and as is well established in this court's precedent, general dictionary definitions are not binding. The question is, what would one of ordinary skill in the art understand? Both Apple's expert and Andre's expert agreed that in this context, signal processing, that general dictionary definition did not apply. The proper definition was a fixed interval of time.
Are you going to turn to the other issue, the question of whether it's rebuttal or new argument?
Yes, Your Honor. I wanted to
ask you one question about that, which is just that, did you argue that this was a new argument? Before the board came to that conclusion?
The board actually came to that conclusion on their own at the oral hearing. And then it was discussed at the oral hearing.
Okay.
And I apologize, but just so I don't lose this, counsel suggested there's some admission that the prior art anticipates if you reverse claim construction. That's actually not correct. The board evaluated anticipation, found a difference between the reference based on their construction, and so didn't breach Andre's other distinctions between the reference and claim 6, 7, and 9. So that's just a subtlety. I think the board's construction was correct, and if you affirm the construction, you would affirm the finding of no anticipation, but I think it's incorrect. Counsel suggested that there's an admission of anticipation, even if you reverse. So in
your patent owner response on the issue, you did argue the obviousness question where W equals 4, right?
Yes, and just to point out why I think the board is correct, twofold. One, counsel suggested that this is a de novo review as to whether it's a new argument. Respectfully, I disagree. All of this court's precedent suggests that you review that for an abuse of discretion.
Well, why isn't it appropriate for them to file a reply responding to your argument that you made in the patent owner response?
It's certainly permitted by the board's rules to file a reply responding to our argument, so long as they're advancing the same theory of patentability that was advanced in the petition. And respectfully, the board
evaluated. Well, why did you address it in the response if you didn't think that the petition raised this issue?
We addressed in our response the argument made in the petition. And so just to clarify, if you go to, again, looking at the board's decision on this issue, this is appendix pages 13 to 15, the exchange was as follows. The Apple in the petition chose to modify or, as counsel mentioned, simplify the algorithm in the prior art to try to make it fit into an obviousness analysis. As the board properly found, the entire purpose of the Martin reference was to determine whether a signal was increasing quickly or not. And as the board found, and as Apple's expert admitted, you can't figure out whether a signal is increasing rapidly or monatomically, as the description is, without having at least two samples. So as the board found, and as our expert critiqued their obviousness analysis, it was an improper modification and combination of the two references to assume you would start with a reference that was focused on determining whether a signal was increasing rapidly. Assume that you would take only a single sample, therefore you would be, that's the W equals 1. So you'd be unable to tell whether the signal was increasing rapidly or not, and then import that algorithm into the base reference, the health reference. And why is that important?
Okay, but so what you're saying is that it's a bad example, but that it is listed in the petition as illustrative, as an example. Right.
And respectfully, no. It's listed in the petition as the requisite element-by-element analysis comparing the references to the claims. So they, in their petition, they chose an element-by-element analysis which depended on this proposed modification of one reference, substitution into the other reference. We argued, and the board agreed
with this. They disagree with you on that, right?
Excuse
they
me?
Disagree with you on that. They say that at page A130, it's Dr. Hochwald illustrates Martin's algorithm with the following example, and then they take the position that it was not limited to W equal 1 later in what would probably be termed more of a claim chart analysis, when they go claim by claim and explain why the prior art discloses each of the claim limitations, right?
And I think the board found, and they correctly found, that that claim by claim analysis did only assume that W equaled 1. So that's in the board's decision at Appendix 14.
Let me ask you something else. I mean, we have case law. Do you agree with our case law that says an IPR may introduce new evidence after the petition stage if the evidence is a legitimate reply to evidence introduced by the patent owner? You agree with that, right?
Yes. That
Your
is.
Position is that you don't think it's a legitimate reply.
Correct. Because okay. We believe the board properly found it was advancing a new and different theory of unpatentability, just as this court has also found in the Intelligent Biosystems case, in the Erosa case, and in recently in the Frymaster case.
It's new because you think when they set W equal to 1, that's they were saying it's only in this circumstance that this reference renders these claims obvious.
Correct. That was the only detailed analysis they gave. They gave a detailed element-by-element analysis where they assume that W equals 1, and that's how they
compare. They do say it's for purpose of simplicity, don't they?
Well, they
maybe it's in the expert's declaration.
Correct. And in the
I'm just trying to understand, when somebody uses an example, when will they be stuck to it when they say it's illustrative?
When that's the only example that they compare element by element.
So in other words, when somebody uses an example to compare element by element, they better sure be careful and make sure they include more examples.
If they want to rely on a different example, a different portion of the reference as their element by element analysis.
Why is it a different portion of the reference?
Because they're instead of assuming that you effectively remove that portion of the algorithm, you resolve
it.
But
it's not a different column and line number of the reference, right?
Sure. It's a completely different reading of the reference.
It's a different, in your view, it would be a different embodiment depending on how you set W.
Yes. And why that's important, just simply, Your Honor, is if you assume away, if W equals 1, the entire window, there's only one sub-window. And so
if this was so clear, how come you didn't raise it?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
If this was so clear that this was a new argument, how come you didn't raise it?
So, and I think we're reviewing the correctness of the board's decision. So the board,
speak up a little, please.
Sure. We're reviewing the correctness of the board's decision.
No, but that doesn't answer my question. If it's so clear that this was a new argument in the reply, why didn't you argue that and only make the argument after the board raised it?
So that's just the basic. So the process is we put in a patent owner's response. Our next opportunity to address the issue was at the oral hearing.
We could have moved to strike the reply. There are plenty of opportunities you had to say that it was a new argument. You didn't say it until the board said it, right?
Well, and respectfully, the flow of the argument was petitioner went first. And so petitioner was making his argument. The administrative judge addressed this. We had proposed demonstratives, which made this argument. But there's not a separate briefing schedule. We got the patent owner's response. They put in the reply. We went to oral hearing. The rules didn't provide for a surreply. They do now, but
well,
at the time,
provided for a motion to strike if it's a new argument, right?
I believe they did provide for a motion to strike, but they also provided the opportunity at the oral hearing. It was just the sequence was petitioner went first, we went second, and the judge raised this issue first. But back to what I think is the core of the issue, it's unquestionable if you look at the board's decision, they did actually evaluate the argument made in the petition. So they give a detailed analysis. This is on appendix pages 13 through 15, where they say they considered Dr. Hochwald's declaration, they considered the petition, and they considered the detailed element-by-element analysis contained in the petition. And they said they credited the testimony of Dr. Douglas over the testimony of Dr. Hochwald for this proposed combination.
Can you tell me where you're reading from?
And I'll just...
Oh, is that page 14?
Appendix page 14 to 15. And their conclusion at the top of the first carryover paragraph at the top of page appendix 15, they say, petitioner fails to provide persuasive reasoning as to why one skilled in the art would have modified Hirsch's teaching in a manner that is contrary to the express disclosure mark. So the way the
that
expert...
That was worth W limited to one, right?
That was given what was presented in the petition.
Got it.
And so and I think that's really the fundamental question. If there were multiple... if petitioner is correct, that they clearly articulated in their petition multiple examples, W equals one was one example, but they had others, it's clear that the board gave them the opportunity to explain that and evaluate that. So the board evaluated the entire petition, the rationale given by their expert, and concluded that they hadn't met the standard of showing unpatentability. So the question is, do they get another chance to come up with a new theory of unpatentability in the reply? The board did consider the portions of the reply that supported the original theory in the petition. What the board said they would not consider is what they deemed a new theory, changing the way the reference was being read and changing the proposed modification. And keep in mind, this is an obviousness combination. This isn't a question of anticipation. And so they were proposing to modify these two references to meet the claim. And so the proposed modification...
Why do you think it makes a difference? I was following you until you said, that, keep in mind, this is obviousness and not anticipation. Why should it matter?
Because why it should matter is they proposed a way to modify the references in their petition. Essentially, what they're arguing now is they should get a chance in reply to propose a different way.
Even if it was anticipation, under your theory, it would be new because there'd be a different way to read the reference to anticipate the claims, right? I don't see the difference. That's what I'm trying. Unless you have some other reason to add. I mean, maybe I'm missing something still.
Sure. I think it's a matter of they looked at the two references that were proposed to be combined. They looked at the rationale provided in the petition, and they concluded that there was additional material not contemplated by the Patent Office's rules in the reply. That's what they didn't consider. But it's clear from the record they did consider the entirety of the petition, and that's what the rules provided, that Apple had to give their basis in the petition.
What about the fact that the APA says that the board has an obligation to consider rebuttal argument?
If it's merely rebuttal as opposed to raising new issues. And so that, respectfully, that's the standard review is you look, was there a rational basis to conclude this was new? I would submit it there was, and therefore you should affirm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bellinger.
Thank you.
Mr. Christian, you have 3 minutes.
Try to be efficient here. I just want to touch on a few of the things we've heard. First, just to the site in our brief, it's at page 51 to 53 of our opening brief where we discuss claim 9 and include the discussion, and there's a reference to figure 7's operation. Second issue I heard him mention was that both experts agree about the meaning of reasonable or periodically, and I think that's actually a disputed issue. The testimony that they were relying on involves our expert saying in response to a deposition question, you know, what is the meaning of periodically? And he says, well, outside the context of the patent, and then he says inside the context of the patent, and he goes into a discussion. The bottom line on this testimony is it's extrinsic evidence. And if you find, as we've explained, that the intrinsic evidence compels a meaning of periodically, this isn't going to change that. You can't have contrary expert testimony override what the intrinsic evidence demonstrates the meaning of a term is. Next thing I want to mention is that we said that they didn't dispute obviousness or anticipation if you find for our construction of periodically. And the basis for that is Appendix 2042 to 84 and also 2494. They didn't raise a different outcome in the case in their briefs before you, whether or not the term periodically changes. And under our construction, there's no argument that they've advanced in this appeal. The question of how you review the new theory of patentability was definitively addressed by this court in Nuvasiv, and this is at 841 F3rd 966 at 970. Says clearly whether a ground the board relied on was new, requiring a new opportunity to respond, is a question of law subject to de novo review. And then finally, one thing to keep in mind is that the board found a motivation to combine Hirsch with Martin in its decision, and that hasn't been disputed. That's Appendix 13, which goes to our ultimate point. If you see a motivation to run the Martin algorithm on the Hirsch apparatus, you yield an apparatus which, under Parker Vision, renders unpatentable these claims.
Okay, thank you for all the time. Thank you, both counsel. Cases submitted.